that made the waves leap to her music, and Selig killed her for fear of losing Hyrok. He wept and sorrowed, then justified his actions. He cursed his family even down to this generation, and he justified it because he didn't want to admit he'd been too frightened, that he would lose Hyrok to the invaders to try to stop them without the magic he gained from the dragon's death. Aurig took a small step away from me. He'd learned by then what killing the dragon meant. The Hyrok bloodline was thick with wizards, but Selig was the last wizard born to your family until your birth. I stared at him, remembering little things he'd told me, things Axiel had told me. That's what drove the dwarves away, wasn't it? Not that the dragon had been killed. If they'd have known that Selig killed the dragon, the dwarves would have attacked Hyrok, and there's no record of it. But the dragon's death did something to Hyrok, something that made the dwarves grow ill and stunted their magic. Aurig nodded. I took a deep breath. That's what caused the mines to quit producing and brought salt creep to the best fields. I've seen the records of the crops that used to come from those fields. We bring in less than half of that on a good year. Yes, whispered Aurig. I stood up and began to pace. It's not just the dwarven kingdoms, though, is it? I stood on top of the remains of the temple at Minogue and looked down on Estion. It's shrinking, and has been for a long time. It's not just Hyrok that's become less than it was, but it's spreading from Hyrok. Yes, whispered Aurig again. And the curse on the family isn't just that there are no more Hyrok mages. I remember my mother when she was happy, but the longer she stayed at Hyrok, the stranger she got. Then there is my father. I remembered what the Aurig I'd dreamed of had told me about Hyrok. I said, Hyrok poisons the people who live there. My grandfather had 8 legitimate children, of whom only 2 survived childhood, my father and his brother, who were sent out for fostering at a very young age. Ciara can't speak, and Tostin was suicidal. The strain of the voyage was telling on my temper so that the results of that ancient stupidity made me want to hit something. And you lost the ability to work magic. I waved my hand, and all of the oil lamps in the room flared brightly. Not completely. Staring at him, I realized that the reason he hadn't moved was because he was afraid of me. I'd been agitated and ranting like my father used to, and for little cause besides stress and fatigue. I inhaled and closed my eyes, and carefully pruned away the anger I felt towards Selig, who hadn't been the hero I needed him to be. Towards my father, my mother, and finally, toward Hyrok, whose magic filled my soul and took my sister's voice and my mother's reason, but most of all, at Aurig, who hadn't believed in me. Anger is stupid, and stupidity will kill you more surely than your opponent's blade. My aunt's voice echoed in my head, and so I pushed anger aside with reason. It was not Selig's fault I'd chosen him for my hero. It was not my fault my father had hated me and my mother had run away. When I was certain it was gone, I looked again at Aurig. He'd been betrayed far more than I. I can't change what Selig did, I said at last. There is nothing I can do to make it right. Aurig's purple eyes were still wide with fear or some other strong emotion, watching me so he could tell which way to jump. I could have you get the two of us into Hyrok when we are close enough. We could help my uncle hold her.
Durok can't hold Hyrok, Ward, said Aurig. There are too many here. Even with all of the Blue Guard, Hyrok could not withstand this many men, not in its current state. It's not ready for a siege.
I thought again. Could you move the bones out? He shook his head.
Out of the cave and its protections, every wizard within 100 miles could find the bones, but it doesn't matter. Selig bound me past my death to keep the bones hidden in the heart of Hyrok.
Did you see any options that would keep Cariarn from the bones? I asked.
No. He turned his head away from me.
Aurig, I waited. Aurig!
Finally, he looked at me. I cleared my throat to hide how much his answer mattered to me.
Do you think that I would kill my uncle just to become Hyrok Meaton again?
His face worked suddenly,
and he dropped to his knees before me. I believe that you never would have killed a dragon to save yourself. I believe that you would never knowingly betray a trust. It was a powerful speech, and I wanted to believe him, but I'd been around slaves. They told their masters what they thought their masters wanted to hear, then tried to believe it themselves. When he looked up, there was a strange expression on his face, one I'd never seen there before. It took me a moment to identify it as hope.
You would not betray Hurok, he said. You would do the right thing no matter what the consequences.
There was something about the way he said it that made me want to question him, as if his words meant more than they said. From the shadows beyond the chest, a shadow darted, chittering loudly, distracting me. Oreg laughed suddenly and picked up the trilly, ruffling the gray-green fur behind the rodent face. He said something to it and set it down to disappear once more in the shadows of the cabin. He pulled up his knees and buried his face in them. His shoulders shook with laughter.
There's a rotten fish in your blankets, he said.
The sailmaster says we'll reach Terfanic tomorrow. Probably very early morning, I said, watching Oreg, who lay on the hammock belly first, swinging it back and forth while he stared at the floor. It was black as pitch outside, but the little oil lamp was sufficient to light a larger space than my cabin.
What? He said. Apparently the floor was more interesting than I was.
Quit watching the cracks go past and listen to me. I paced as I spoke. Two strides, heel turn. Two strides, heel turn. Our cabin was the second largest on the ship, but that wasn't saying much. As soon as you can, transport yourself to Terfanig and warn them about the Vorsag. Have the headman send a message to my uncle and—
Calm yourself, Ward,
soothed Oreg, rolling over and bouncing out of the hammock in one easy motion, effectively stopping my pacing because there was no more room.
I know. I'm to tell the townspeople to hide themselves until the armies have passed by. Then, as soon as we're close enough, I'll transport both of us to Hurog, and you can warn Dorok.
Something about Oreg had changed in the last few days. Perhaps it was just that he trusted me, but I'd never seen him in such calm, good humor. It made me nervous. All right, more nervous. Waves of panicky self-doubt had been rolling over me since I awoke on board Kariarn's ship. My plans were so tenuous as to be laughable. Nothing I could do would guarantee my uncle's safety. Even without experience in siege warfare, I knew that Hurog couldn't stand off a siege before harvest. So the only answer was to get the people away from Hurog and hope that Kariarn would leave with the bones. Oreg seemed strangely unworried about that part for all of his earlier histrionics. He spoke confidently of our weak plans, while I wasn't even certain my uncle would trust me when I told him to get our people out of Hurog. If I'd slept with Bastia, she might not have gone back to Kariarn. I threw myself back on the bed, since Oreg had the hammock.
It wouldn't have mattered, Ward. She is bound to him.
Could you have broken the binding, Oreg?
If she wanted it badly enough, he answered, but she didn't.
His reasonableness made me furious, and I curled my hands into fists, just as my father always had before he lost his temper. The thought forced me to stretch my fingers out and flatten them against the narrow mattress. Sorry, Oreg, just jitters. I just wish I knew what was going to happen.
Some fleeting emotion crossed his face. All things happen in their own time, whether you want them to or not.
He stiffened suddenly, lifting his head and staring at nothing.
We've come farther than I thought. I can warn Terfanig now.
Go, I commanded, but he was already gone.
I took in a deep, shaky breath. It had begun. I didn't know whether I felt better or worse. There were no ships at the mooring when we sailed within sight of Terfanig, nor were the dock workers there. It didn't hamper Kariarn's ships. They weighed anchor offshore and sent eel boats to transport troops and mounts to land.
Is it always so quiet here?
Asked Kariarn from the prow of our ship. I shook my head watching the Versagian eel boats. They didn't look a lot like eels, being much broader and flatter than anything a Northlander would sail. In the season of storms, they'd be capsized, but it was calm today, and they slid through the waves as if they were negotiating the southern seas.
Where are all the people?
My brother must have gotten a message to Duroc, I said without concern.
Look at that. If they're not careful, that horse is going to...
They've got the blindfold on. Could have lost the boat.
A message? Said Cariharn. What message? How many troops could he muster?
I rolled my eyes at him and said, My uncle has a wizard, and so does Havernus. I would suppose from the results in front of us that Havernus's man sent a message to my uncle's. Inside, I felt a flash of hope. I'd forgotten about the wizards.
Bastia?
He asked. She shook her head. My sources say Duroc's wizard is inept, and Havernus's man has no talent for far speaking. I suppose Aurig might.
She looked at me. I shrugged. He might be able to do it. He likes to be mysterious. It doesn't matter. Tefanik has no fighters except 10 or 20 mercenaries hired to escort merchants. This late in the summer, there won't be as many. My uncle has only half the Blue Guard.
He has another estate.
Iftihar, in Talvin, I answered. We'd already discussed this. I wasn't the only one nervous about the assault, if for different reasons. It was hard to remember that Cariharn was a little older than I. Even if he had time to bring them all in, he would not have half the men you bring against him.
If a messenger could get through so fast, so also could troops.
Not so, I raised my voice a bit impatiently. You know how much longer an army takes to cover so much territory. There are supply wagons that have to be taken on real roads, or at least decent trails. They'd be lucky to make 5 leagues a day. They won't be here for another week at the very least. By that time, Hirog will be mine, and I'll welcome them in, having supposedly driven your troops off. On the ship nearest to us, Cariharn's wizards brought the Basilisk on deck. It was longer than any of the eel boats, but they appeared to be trying to get it in one anyway. The long, slender boat swayed wildly on the pulleys that would lower it into the sea as soon as it was loaded. The Basilisk was so heavy that the ship it was on dipped dangerously towards us as the creatures positioned threw the ship off balance. A big wave at the wrong angle would capsize it. The Basilisk remained motionless, all 4 legs spread out to support it against the motion of the ship. At long last, it dashed across the deck and into the eel boat, but it didn't even hesitate aboard the rocking vessel, but slid over the edge and disappeared into the sea. Who would have thought stone dragons could swim?
Cariharn swore and dashed to the side of the boat nearest the beast. I followed him in time to see the Basilisk dive under our ship, hitting it solidly with its tail. I grabbed the rail as the ship wallowed, instinctively grabbing Cariharn before he went over. He didn't pause to thank me, but ran to the other side. The Basilisk surfaced near the rock-strewn shore and climbed out of the water. It settled on the rocks and closed its jewel-toned eyes, blending so thoroughly that if I hadn't seen him move to the spot, I wouldn't have known he was there. A heavy hand slapped my shoulder.
Thanks for keeping me from falling in,
Cariharn grinned at me. I grinned back and wondered if he would have drowned if I let him go over. And perhaps I could have jumped in to rescue him and made certain of it. That there hadn't been time for thought, and instinct had bade me save him.
Sire, the boat is ready.
One of the sailors approached cautiously. Cariharn waved at me to precede him. I turned, and darkness pulled over my eyes. I woke up in a room that wasn't surging with the sea. My wrists and ankles were tightly knotted together.
I'm sorry for this, especially after you've demonstrated your good faith, said Cariharn. I focused on his face. The after effects of Bastia's spell weren't as bad this time. I must have been getting used to it. I can't afford to trust you right now, explained Cariharn sincerely. After we've taken the keep, I'll send some people to get you. Then Bastia and my mages will pretend to help you take back the keep with a few impressive shows of magic. You'll be quite safe here. No one but my men will know that you've been our prisoner. Even if some of the Terfanic people return, I'm leaving the Basilisk in the main room, just outside your door. My mages tell me that it's become harder to control and is as likely to kill my army as it is your uncle's, so it will serve as a guardian for you. To keep you safe.
I nodded my head, slowly, so the pulsing pain didn't get worse.
I understand. Just be sure you take the keep.
wouldn't want to be stuck here until the basilisk gets hungry. Carrion laughed and left the room, Bastia trailing behind him.
They made a mistake taking the basilisk here, said Orig, emerging from the shadows after the bolt slid home. I thought they might have trouble. The land here, even so far from Hurog, is steeped in dragon magic, which is close kin to that of the basilisk. I doubt they have any control of her now, whatever they think. You're not the only one who's able to play stupid.
Did you get everyone out?
I carried a message from your uncle to the headman who can read. Bless his merchant's heart, he said.
A message from my uncle?
Bearing his seal and in his own writing, confirmed Orig. Forgery is one of my many talents. At Durok's command, the Terfanic citizens have taken to the hills where they cannot be easily found.
He took a slender dagger out of his boot and sliced the bindings on my wrists and ankles. We decided not to send a message for Hurog. A message alone wouldn't give Durok cause enough to leave Hurog. I wouldn't do it myself. Can you get to Hurog to warn them too?
No.
I stopped rubbing my wrist and said, No? My stomach clenched. Carrion's people would slaughter my uncle's people.
It is too far from you. I can't do it.
I cleared my mind of panic. Then we'll just have to get close enough to do it. And Carrion clears out of Terfanig, break us out of here, and... Why are you shaking your head?
She's spelled the building against your escape. It's specific, so it's nearly impossible to counterspell without alerting her. I think she suspects that you know a lot more magic than you do. Maybe it was the pyre at Silverfells.
So you can come and go, but not far enough to do us any good. And I can't leave without alerting Bastia. Should we worry about her?
He nodded. With the number of wizards Carrion has, if they know what we're about, they can probably stop us. But she was working fast, and the spells on the doors are not holding. Doors are meant to let people in and out, and their nature fights against imprisoning spells.
The outside door is past the basilisk, I said. You said she was smarter than Carrion believes. Could we negotiate?
He shook his head. She won't negotiate with her food, but if I can touch her for a few minutes, I can control her.
Even here? Where there is dragon magic?
Orig smiled. Especially here.
So all I need to do is distract it for a while. With the same magic that allowed me to find lost things, I found where the basilisk was, waiting outside about 10 feet from the door. I still wasn't used to having my magic back. I knew exactly where it was. Surely there would be some way to use that. And, as if it had been just this afternoon that Tostin and I fought blind, I knew what I could do. Before I'd seen it come off the ship, I'd have been a lot more confident of my chances. There was a broom leaning against one corner of the room where Orig and I were held. It wasn't much of a weapon, more of a stick than a staff, and I would have to try it blindfolded, using my magic to tell me where it was. Give me your shirt, I said at last.
Why? Because I don't want to end up like Landislaw. I need to cover my eyes.
What about your shirt? He said as he complied with my request. I'd rather have some protection if it hits me. I trust you'll spell the creature as soon as you can. I took the broom and gave it a thwack against the wall. It bent, but it didn't break. Beyond the wooden walls, the basilisk moved restlessly.
Sounds like there's a lot of space out there. Are we in one of the warehouses at the docks?
Orig nodded.
Cleaned for the new harvest.
There was no time to waste. Carrion and his army could be at Hurog by early evening, even on horses that were weak from the sea voyage. We had to beat him there. I took Orig's shirt and ripped several ragged strips off of it until I could fashion a blindfold. Orig led me to the door the basilisk waited behind. My knowledge of magic hadn't increased with my abilities, but finding had always been mine.
Where was the basilisk?
As before, the response I got back was better than sight. I hoped. Open the door, I said. He threw it open hard, and the basilisk retreated enough for me to get out into the open room.
Yeah, over here,
I shouted, anything to get its attention. It moved toward me slowly. Orig had said it wasn't stupid. I backed away from it and bumped into something unexpected. An upright timber, identified by a brush with the back of my hand. I dodged behind it, and something hit the timber hard enough to crack it. The basilisk cried out either in anger or in pain and darted forward with that sudden swiftness it was capable of. I ran at it. Running away from it was out of the question. I'd likely brain myself on one of the support posts or run into the wall. Magic told me where the basilisk was, but I couldn't see warped floorboards or walls at the same time. I thumped it hard on the nose, and my broomstick broke. Before I could think anything but an astonished help, something my finding sense insisted was taller than me and about to hurt me badly swept in from my left. I jumped, lifting my feet as high as I could, tucking them like a horse going over a fence. It caught my heel. The force of the blow stretched me flat out in the air and tossed me away from the basilisk. I tucked, but unable to see the ground. I landed badly, slamming my head onto the ground. Instinct forced me to my feet, but I was dazed and unable to recover my sense of where the basilisk was. Something flickered over my face, and sheer terror brought me to my senses. I'd seen the basilisk tongue Landislaw's face before eating him. Seeing me standing still, the basilisk must have assumed I was caught in its gaze. Urgently, I called my magic, found the basilisk, and dove beneath its head. Blindfolded I might have been, but terror showed me its gaping jaws as I rolled on the ground beneath it. Startled by my action, it didn't move for just long enough for me to get a firm grip on a hind leg. I hadn't realized I was still holding the broken stick until I had to drop it to secure my hold on the basilisk's leg. I'd underestimated the creature's flexibility. It reached over with its other hind leg and caught my back with a sharp claw. If I'd have held on, I think I would have been dead. But my aunt's drills were firmly fixed in my body's reflexes, and I went with the force of the blow rather than resisting it. I let go of the leg and flung myself forward onto the ground and rolled to my feet, at which point I scurried away like a rabbit, hands outstretched to hit the wall or support beam before my face did. When I reached the wall, I turned, panting. Once again, I'd lost the sense of where the creature was. The warehouse was silent, except for the slight sound of clicking scales, but I couldn't be sure which direction it was coming from. Something warm and wet dripped down my leg from my back. I couldn't tell how much damage the basilisk had done.
"I've got her," Oreg said. "You can take off the blindfold."
Whew. Now what do we do with it? I took off my blindfold in time to see Oreg slide down her shoulder onto the floor.
"She'll die here. The climate is too cool."
He frowned at her. "Does it eat things other than people?" I asked. I was all for helping rare creatures, but I wasn't going to inflict it on a helpless village. Oreg slanted me a humorous glance.
"Sometimes. I think I'll take the same tack some long-ago wizard did."
He drew in a deep breath and put his hands on its side. I closed my eyes, trying to hide my ecstasy as Oreg's magic swept into the room like a warm wind, filling the empty places in my soul that leaving Hurog had made. I drew that warmth around me, as if it were a blanket.
"To stone,"
said Oreg in Old Shavig. There was such power in his voice, I had to open my eyes. Magic glittered like a golden fog over the room, covering Oreg, the basilisk, and me as Oreg used it to draw patterns over the basilisk scales. As I watched, the basilisk began to draw into itself, changing color from forest green to gray as delicate scale edges blurred and disappeared. When at last the magic was gone, and Oreg and I stood alone in the storage room, the basilisk was nothing more than a boulder less than half the size the creature had been. The dirt floor under the stone was muddy. Oreg flexed his hands and stretched his neck as if working magic had tightened his muscles.
"We've got to go," I said.
Oreg nodded.
"I'll just see that Carrion's mages don't wake her again."
He made an abrupt pushing motion and the stone sank through the wet ground until there was nothing left of it but a dark stain on the earth that would dry in a few hours. There was no time to look for horses. After Oreg unspelled the door and wrapped what was left of his shirt around my back, he and I ran down the path Carrion's army had taken with less than an hour's head start. Holding hope tightly to my chest, I ran as I'd never done before, ignoring burning lungs and burning legs. After the first few miles, I quit speculating, concentrating only on moving my feet one after the other. There was a rhythm to running, an echo of the pulse that beat behind my ears. When Aura grabbed my arm, I didn't even pause, so I tripped over the stool in my bedroom where he'd brought us, and I landed hard on the stone floor. My room smelled musty, as if the servants hadn't aired it out in a long time. Light streaming down from the narrow windows revealed that the surfaces of the furniture had been dusted.
"Oreg, where's Durok?"
Oreg reached for my arm again. I rolled out of reach and got to my feet before I let him touch me. I was not going to be sitting on the floor when we confronted my uncle. I don't know what I expected Durok to be doing, but it certainly wasn't conferring with Stalla in the Great Hall. Stalla should only be halfway here, even if Tostin had managed to sprint all the way to Kallus. But Bekrum, Axiel, Tostin, and Ciara were standing on the other side of the table from Durok and Stalla. Gathering round behind them were 8 or 10 very short, very broad men. Dwarves. I was still gaping when Tostin looked up and saw Oreg and me.
"How did you get here?"
I asked, betraying to Tostin that I had known they wouldn't make it. But somehow they had. Bekrum tilted his head at Axiel, a wry look on his face. "I think that's our question. I didn't hear the door open." But he let it go. "You know how some of the guards say that Axiel, when he is really, really drunk, claims to be the son of the Dwarven King?" "He is," I answered. Bekrum nodded in agreement. "And they have the most interesting method of getting from one place to another." "Bekrum's told me what you've been up to, Ward. Do you know how many soldiers Carrion's bringing?" asked Durok, breaking into the conversation. "About 1,000, I said, pulled back to more urgent matters. And they've just left Terfanic. They'll be here by nightfall. Even if you've managed somehow to get the whole of the Blue Guard, you cannot hold Hurog, unless... Axiel, how many of your people are here?"
"Just those you see here. The days when my people could afford to waste lives and armies are long gone, Ward. We've left the rest of the Blue Guard at Kallus to come home the slow way."
"Right," I continued after drawing a breath. "So we need to get every person out of Hurog and into hiding in the mountains. Carrion doesn't want Hurog. He wants something hidden here. He knows where it is, and once he has it, he'll leave. But there's no time to waste. The bronze doors on the mountain make a good place to gather. It's high. You can see for miles if Carrion sends men up it, and it might be possible to defend it from people attacking below." It was only as I finished that I realized I was issuing orders. Durok gave me a considering look. My uncle had only known me while I was pretending to be stupid. I didn't know how long Bekrum and Tostin had been there, nor what kind of story they'd told my uncle, but it must have been something, because he only nodded and said, "If Carrion is so close, explanations can wait. We'd best get organized." Evacuation took much longer than I was comfortable with, but Durok was thorough. He mounted all the grooms and sent them and their horses onto Iftahar. We gathered all the foodstuff and anything that could be used as a blanket or a weapon. I found my father's sword and knife in the armory and fastened them on my belt. Carrion still had mine. As I strode out of the armory, I came face to face with my mother. She smiled at me vaguely.
"When did you get back, Fenwick?"
The skin on the back of my neck crawled.
"Mother, I'm Ward. Father is dead."
Her smile widened but didn't cover the blankness of her eyes.
"Of course you are. And how is my baby today?"
"There you are, my lady." Her maidservant trotted around the corner of the hall. She shot me a defensive look and wrapped a heavy wool cloak around my mother's shoulders.
"Let's get you out to the courtyard."
To me, she said, she's been like this for a while. Mostly, she doesn't even know where she is. Oreg appeared at my side, his arms full of blankets. I took a deep breath.
"Are you through gathering things? We need to get to the Bailey."
When we got outside of the keep proper, my uncle was already hard at work. Fascinated, I watched Durok use the Blue Guard as the base of the troop of soldiers he formed out of household servants. When he was finished, a ragged army marched smartly up the trails to the great doors high on the mountains overlooking Hurog. It was a tricky climb at best, but with such an urgent need for swiftness, I found our pace unbearably slow.
"So," said Bekrum, marching beside me, carrying a sleepy child of 3 or 4 who belonged to one of the kitchen maids. "Did you ever try to dig under the bronze doors?"
I think it was the first time my cousin had sought me out for conversation. I knew he could care less about the doors. It was a peace offering between us. I accepted it.
"No. After you and Erdrick dug that trench around them, my father made me fill in the holes."
He laughed shortly. "Erdrick thought it was a waste of time. I did the digging." The child he held peered worriedly into my cousin's face. He smiled at her, and she tucked back down against him.
"Why do you think they are there?"
I shrugged and began climbing with him again. I suppose I could ask Orig. They've been there a long time, Brekram. I used to think they hid the dwarven ways, but I take it the entrance to the dwarven tunnels is in Hurog itself. The Hurog meet, and my father said that he thought it might have been the grave of some ancient hero. We buried our dead on the side of the hill. Perhaps it was an ancient tradition. Just ahead of us, my mother fell and wouldn't get up when her maidservant tried to tug her to her feet. Hesitating, I knelt beside her. Mother, I said. Blank eyes stared into mine.
Aunt, you can't stay here, said Beckram, hampered by his burden.
I didn't know what to do. In my extremity, I reached for the familiar comfort of Hurog's magic. I hadn't meant to do anything at all, but I had been looking for my mother in those blank eyes, and I was a finder. Cold chills crept up the back of my neck as I realized what the magic told me. There was nothing behind the blank gaze. Truly nothing. My mother was gone forever.
I'll carry her, I said, answering the maid's anxiety. I picked up my mother's body, which still breathed and moved, and carried it the rest of the way up the mountain. I would remember my young mother, who played with me while my father was away at war, and not the woman who hid in her herbal potions until there was nothing left of her.
We made it to the bronze doors before Carrion reached Hurog. I found a place to sit where I could look down at the keep. I should have been exhausted, and I was, but the flow of Hurog's magic through my flesh kept me from feeling it much, so I felt almost peaceful as, from my mountain vantage point, I saw Carrion's massive army approach Hurog. They stopped when they saw Hurog's open gates. After a long hesitation, during which I imagined them sending a few riders to make certain the keep was indeed empty, a section of people pushed through to the bailey. Tostin came up behind me and hit me hard in the shoulder. It was the first time he'd approached me since I'd found them all in the great hall.
"What's that for?" I whispered furiously. Sound travels oddly in the mountains, and Durok had warned us all to keep quiet once we'd sighted the Vorsag.
"That's for sending me to safety while you went out to get all the glory."
Avernus told us there was no possible way for an army to get to Hurog before Carrion, and you knew it too, he returned as hotly.
I rubbed my shoulder and decided he'd a right to be angry.
So how did you get here? You could have pushed me over with a feather when I saw you in the Great Hall. You were supposed to be safe at Kallus.
Tostin grinned at me, the expression so young it hurt my heart. You're going to wish you'd come with us, he said.
You remember there were only a few keeps the dwarves traded with?
I nodded.
That's because they travel on an underground waterway, and there are only a few places where it surfaces. Hurog is one, Kallus is another.
He chuckled. You should have seen old Havernus's face when Axiel led us to an opening in the cellar.
You should have seen my father's face when he found out I'd showed our secret ways to humans, said Axiel as he seated himself by my side.
The eight dwarves who'd been following him, as if they were some sort of honor guard, found places to sit in front of him. He handed me a blanket, and I wrapped it around me.
I'd explained the situation to him, and he allowed us to bring everyone here.
He looked at me earnestly as if anxious to cement my good opinion of his father.
It wasn't without cost, Ward. The waterways take a lot of magic to traverse, and my father hasn't much power to waste.
Tostin shook his head in awe. It was incredible, Ward. Some of the caverns looked like they were made of crystals. The boats were flat, like the river boats that the Talvins use on their tame rivers. But the waterway isn't tame at all. I don't think we'd have made better time if we'd flown.
Beckram, wandering by with Ciara beside him, paused to say,
It was incredible,
mostly because we all survived to disembark at Hurog.
Ciara sat down and dragged half my blanket around her. I wrapped an arm about her shoulders, content at last. The magic of home soothed my soul. Ciara's presence just solidified my well-being. Against all odds, Hurog would survive this intrusion, as would my uncle. Carrion wouldn't seek us out here. I couldn't think of a time I'd been happier than when I was watching sparks that were Carrion's torch-bearing men walking along the top of Hurog's walls. Orig sat down at my feet. His face contained the same bone-deep peace I felt. His peace disturbed mine. He'd been so worried about the dragon bones, and now he was content to let Carrion have them.
I would never understand him. In a dreamy voice that carried clearly to anyone who wanted to listen, he said,
"They are very close to the dragon bones. Carrion has wasted no time."
"What?" said Axiel in a voice I'd never heard from him. "What dragon bones?"
Aurig smiled at Axiel and said innocently, "Didn't we tell you what it was Carrion wanted? What Ward would sacrifice to him to save the people of Hurog?"
The smug satisfaction that underlay his words caused me to shift Ciara away from me. I wrapped the blanket tightly around her while I kept my eyes on Aurig. Axiel turned to me accusingly.
"There are dragon bones at Hurog?"
I nodded. One of the dwarves said in a voice like the winter wind,
"Dragons eat their dead so that there will be no dragon bones for stupid humans to play with."
Axiel ignored him.
You can't let Carrion have them."
It was fear in his voice. I'd never heard Axiel afraid before.
"Do you forget what he's done in Arnstone? The villages? He killed scores of people for a bit of power, and you'd give him dragon bones?"
Aurig smiled at me.
"Ward doesn't know about dragon bones. He was never trained in magic. Tell Ward what the dragon bones will do. I don't think he'd want to believe just me.
For a human mage to have dragon bone is like giving a toddler a blazing torch in a grass hut."
Axiel struggled for words.
"It is forbidden,"
said the dwarf who'd spoken before. Urgently, he came to his feet.
"It gives too much power, corrupting power. My king thinks that's what's caused this blight on dwarvenkind in the first place, that a human mage consumed dragon bone."
"Selig," I thought. Had Selig gotten power that way?
"Carrion will destroy what is left of this world, Ward."
Axiel's face was pale in the fading light.
"Oh, gods, we are undone."
"They're in the cave,"
said Aurig, still looking at me. His gaze was intent, like a cat with a mouse. What had he led me to? And it had been deliberate on his part. He'd never attempted to tell me that the dragon bones were this dangerous.
"Ward knows a way to stop them. And I did.
Oh, Sifirin, I did. Aurig had told me." "You said you could hold them off for days, Aurig."
My voice was tight.
"I could have," he agreed. "But that would have just prolonged the outcome. So I helped them a little instead. You asked me once if there was a way to change what Selig did.
Stala always said it was important to know what motivates your allies as well as your enemies. Aurig had once told me what he wanted a long time ago while an invisible whip lay open his skin, but I hadn't paid attention.
Aurig wanted death. He'd planned this. Every step we'd taken off the ship, that's why he'd quit being mad at me on the boat, because he knew he could force me to this. Tears gathered in my eyes, and I fought for air. I protected those I loved.
The cave is under the keep, I said. It'll still be there if Hurog falls until not one stone stands on another.
It won't matter, he replied. I can see to it the cavern falls. Ward, you can't change the past, but you can put right what is wrong.
He looked at nothing for a moment, and when he resumed speaking, his voice was hurried.
You must be quick. They found the bones. You have to do it right now.
He leaned toward me earnestly.
Selig couldn't let Hurog be destroyed, so he began the evil here. Your father would never have been able to give up so much just to do the right thing, to correct what has been put wrong. This is something that only you, Wardwick, Hurog Meaton, can do, because of the ring you wear.
I drew my father's dagger and stared at the terrible triumph in Aurig's face.
Please, Ward.
Tears blurred my eyes as I set my hand on his face. Some part of me was aware that Ciara was struggling with her blanket, trying to stop me. I kissed Aurig's forehead, then stepped behind him. I held him as I slid my father's sharp hunting knife into the base of Aurig's skull with the hand which bore the worn platinum ring. It was quick. It was very probably painless for him. I felt his last breath touch my arm, warmth in the chill of the night. but I knew I'd never be warm again. For a moment, it seemed to me that the forest around us became still, waiting. Then the earth shook, with the force of the magic Oryg's passing had unleashed. The surprised cries of the men and women gathered on the mountain was drowned out by the sound below, for Hurog Keep, my home, was collapsing. The ancient stones, marred by the claws of dragons, tumbled to the ground, one by one at first. Then, with a great cracking sound, the keep trembled apart and the walls collapsed inward upon it. Dust rose, and between it and the ever-darkening skies, Hurog was mercifully hidden from view. To me, all this was secondary, as was the feeling of Ciara's nails tearing wildly at my bloody hand, the incredulous look on Tostin's face as he tried to drag her away from me, even the rapid disintegration of Oryg's body, as if the years that had been artificially held at bay were absorbing his essence, was distant. All I could feel was the wild rush of magic that surged through me, burning my lungs and heart as the land was burned clean of an ancient wrong, older far than the dragon Selig had killed. Oryg had been incorrect. That betrayal had removed the stopper from the vial of ill, but I understood at last it was the older wrong that had poisoned the land, a crime of a father against his son. The upheaval was over before Tostin succeeded in pulling Ciara away from me. Below us, the once stalwart hulls of Hurog were nothing but a formless heap that was soon mercifully covered by the blanket of night. Sitting on the side of the mountain with a trace of dust on my lap, it occurred to me that Axiel had been right. I had stopped the curse that was killing his people, and, as Athervon had told him, I wouldn't have been able to do it without him. I would never have killed Oryg just on his own word that dragon bones were dangerous. It had taken the naked terror on Axiel's face, he who was never afraid, to convince me. I had just saved the 5 kingdoms from powers that hadn't been seen since the age of the Empire, and I'd done it by becoming worse than my father. I'd killed a man I'd loved as my brother. And Oryg was right. My father wouldn't have done it. Wouldn't have seen the necessity. Selig wouldn't have done it. He'd have been certain he could control the damage. He wouldn't have read the fear on Axiel's face and understood the danger. It was Wardwick of Hurog who killed Oryg and destroyed Hurog. I huddled on the cold earth, stripped at last until there was only me and no one else to be. I buried my face in my blood-covered hands and cried. Chapter 15, Wardwick. Stories and songs all have a final word, but in real life, not even death is a true end. Just look at the lasting impression my father made. They tell me I didn't speak for several days, but I don't remember it. The healer my uncle brought in said it was exhaustion. Oryg and I had run almost 15 miles before Oryg had been able to jump us to Hurog, and blood loss from the basilisk's wound in my back. The blue guard, my uncle told me later, chased the few remaining Vorsag who hadn't left on their own. My uncle's firm hands upon the reins saw it to it that the harvest was taken in, though the crops were indeed poor. That winter was hard on the people of Hurog. It wasn't the food. My uncle had grain shipped in from Iftahar, but the Vorsag had fired as many of the people's cottages as they could, and the shelters we'd managed to erect before winter weren't enough to keep the fury of the north wind at bay. My uncle had tried to move me to Iftahar with my mother, Ciara, and Tostin, but I would not go. I would not leave Hurog. Only the keep was gone. The people were still at risk. My uncle understood. One night after working all day harvesting wheat, I told the whole story of what Oryg was and why I'd done what I had to all of them. Durok, Tostin, Ciara, Bekram, Axiel, and Stala. Axiel and his dwarven comrades left soon after that, having cleared a way to their underground river. Axiel promised to be back in the spring. Ciara avoided me when she could, which bothered Tostin so much that I began avoiding both of them until my uncle left for Iftahar and took them with him before the first storm of winter.
I often took Pansy or Feather, returned to us from Ornstone several weeks after Hurog fell, along with the other horses we'd left behind, and ran the mountain trails at a pace that would have left Penrod shaking his head. When the snows made running impossible, I fought with Stala and whatever brave soul in the ranks of the Blue Guard would come against me. That wasn't enough, so I began excavating Hurog where the dwarves had left off, sorting the good stone from the broken. At first, I did it alone. But one morning, I came out to find Stala had organized a work party to help. We had the inner curtain walls rebuilt by the time the snow melted. By spring, the people of Hurog treated me as if I were Hurog Meaton, though they all knew the title belonged to my uncle. Soon after the first robins returned from the south, my brother came back to Hurog. I knew he was coming, not because of any messenger, but because the grasses of Hurog whispered that someone of Hurog blood had come back. Since I'd killed Orog, I'd become even more attuned to the magic flows around Hurog. Once I'd needed them to complete me, but now I completed them. I rode Feather out to greet him.
"You've lost weight," he said.
"You look better," I replied, because it was true. The air of aloneness he'd carried like a cloak was gone. "Mother's dead," he said. "A maid found her wandering outside one night in a storm. She took fever and wasted away." I nodded, but she'd died a long time ago.
"I came also to tell you that Bekrim and Ciara are engaged," he said warily.
Feather, impatient, standing for no reason she could see, pawed the ground, but quieted when I shifted my weight. Bekrim and Ciara? She was 17. Mother had been younger than that when my father married her, but Bekrim and Ciara?
"Tell him I expect him to keep her out of the sewers," I said after a moment.
Tostin looked away. "I tried to get Ciara to come and tell you herself. She told me to send you her love." I nodded my head. "She can talk now, did you know?"
"I did. Durok wrote to me.
She's afraid if she comes back to Hurog, she'll lose her voice again. But she wants you to come to their wedding this summer."
"All right," I said.
"Our uncle intends you to have Hurog.
Bekrim doesn't want it.
Durok has sent a formal petition to the king."
"The king has other things to worry about," I said. Once it was clear that Carrion was dead, Havernus's Hundred had little trouble sending the Vorsag on their way. But the Hundred hadn't returned to Estion when they were called upon to do so. They had retreated to their estates and were presumed to be building up armies. Jacobin might have declared a treason, except that the rest of the Five Kingdoms thought that Havernus's Hundred were heroes, and heroes were difficult to prosecute.
"Don't you care?" Tostin sounded worried. I shrugged and looked at the worn platinum ring on my finger.
"Have you come to stay?"
"If you'll have me." Feather sidestepped as I leaned toward him.
"You're my brother. You're always welcome here."
To rebuild Hurog's inner buildings, I had first to clear away the rubble so I could build some sort of support over the roof of the Dragonbone Cave, which had collapsed in the center, killing Carrion and his wizards and burying them under a mound of stones. My work party had been reduced by the people needed to plant the fields, leaving only Stala's Blue Guard and Tostin when we uncovered the bodies of Bestia, Carrion, and the rest of his wizards. Orog had been right. They were very near to the dragon bones. I had them buried in the mass grave we'd dug for the other bodies we'd found in the rubble. If the Vorsag wanted proof of Carrion's death, they would have to take my word, because the bodies were identifiable only by their clothing. I carried Bastia's body myself. Either by Orog's magic or some odd chance, the dragon bones were still intact. Axiel arrived soon enough to help Tostin and me excavate them all and cart them to the field with the salt creep. The three of us ground the bones into meal, and then tilled it into the ground as Durok had done with seashells the year before. Axiel looked relieved when the last of the white powder was covered with dirt. When the field was planted, seedlings sprang up from the once poisoned soil. I woke early one morning in high summer, knowing something had changed. I dressed hurriedly in hunting clothes and saddled Pansy myself to get on the mountain trail sooner.
Sensing my urgency, Pansy ran as if the demons of Minogue were nipping his heels, slowing only when the trail became so steep that I dismounted and walked beside him. When he stopped abruptly, eyes rolling and nostrils tasting the air with sudden urgency, I stopped beside him. "What's up?" I asked. It took a lot to frighten an animal that had been in battle as often as Pansy. The stallion snorted at the sound of my voice and turned to rub its sweaty head against me, knocking me sideways a step. Whatever had bothered him was gone now. I could smell something, too. It reminded me of the blacksmith's forge, heat and metal. That's why I wasn't as surprised as I might have been when we topped the final rise and got a clear view of the bronze doors. Axial, when I asked, had examined them and told me he didn't think they actually opened at all. He was as confounded about their purpose as I was. Aurig hadn't been around to ask. The doors were open now, though it hadn't happened easily. The metal was blackened on the underside as if by a terrible fire. The left-hand door lay yards away, while the right-hand door was misshapen and bent. When I touched the door nearest me, it was still warm. When I tugged on it, I couldn't budge it an inch. I dropped Pansy's reins and cautiously approached the hole in the mountain that the doors had covered. I don't know what I expected, but an empty hole was anticlimactic. It was just a rectangular hole, barely deeper than I was tall. If I put a hay wagon in it, there wouldn't be room for the team to pull it. The only odd thing about it was the exactness of the flat walls and clean corners, given that it was all just packed earth. Behind me, Pansy whickered a greeting. I turned, thinking Toasten had followed me because Pansy didn't welcome strangers. But Aurig was hardly a stranger. "Hello, Ward," he said with a self-conscious dip of his shoulders.
I swallowed. "I hope this doesn't mean I'll have to kill you again," I said.
He focused on the battered wreck of Hurog and patted Pansy absently on the forehead. "I knew you were going to be difficult about this." He glanced at my face and then quickly back to Hurog. "You've done a lot of work. What did you do with the dragon bones?"
"Sewed them into the field that used to have a bad case of salt creep," I said. He smiled.
"So I don't have to eat them?"
"I thought that was a bad thing," I said.
There was something else someone had said about eating dragon bones, but I couldn't remember what it was.
Aurig bent down and grabbed a rock. He took two steps and threw it. We both watched it bounce down the mountain until it rolled out of sight in a patch of bramble.
"Not if you're a dragon," he said. When he saw my face, he said almost frantically, I didn't know I wouldn't die. You have to believe me. I wouldn't have hurt you like that for nothing. I would have told you, dragons don't age, but you can kill them, and I was only a quarter blood. I thought his spell had required my death to bind my soul to stone. My tongue was slow. I couldn't ask any of the things I wanted to. What I managed was,
"The emperors of old, it is said, were served by a dragon."
Carriarn had told me that.
"My father," agreed Aurig. "Dragons can take on human shape.
My grandmother was young and foolish and fell in love with a human. My father belonged to neither world and chose to serve the emperors as a mage." He spoke too rapidly, anxious to please.
"What was in the hole?" I asked. "Me," he said. "I was. I didn't know that he'd saved my body there." I sat down and buried my chin in my hands, hoping, I suppose, to come up with a single thing to say, to feel. "You've lost weight," he said after a while, and I remembered that Toasten had said the same.
"Yes, well, I thought I'd killed you."
I discovered that I didn't mind him feeling guilty. It assuaged the deep pit of rage I felt, a pit that trembled beneath another, larger emotion.
"Tell me what I can do," he said, sounding close to tears himself.
He closed the distance between us and fell to his knees.
"What took you so long?"
I asked, not looking at him.
"I was dead," he said, "or near enough to make no difference. I don't know how long it's been. A year? Two? Not much longer, or you would have changed more." It took that long for me to awaken. My body had been lying there for, well,
since before the last emperor died. Tens of centuries. Magic is powerful, but not always instantaneous. If your father forced you to wear that body which I killed, how is it that you look as you do now? I asked. He gave half a laugh, because the body he made took its semblance from me. Dragons can shift their shape. How do you think my father was conceived? I'd been angry at him for a lot longer than the past few minutes. For the first time in nearly a year, I felt the rage slide away, out of reach. It's been a little less than a year, I said, answering his earlier question. He must have read something in my voice, because he took up a more casual pose, relaxing on the mountainside. I am surprised, really. I'd have thought it would take much longer. You're not a slave to this anymore, are you? I asked, flashing the worn, silver-colored ring. He shook his head. No. There were things I wanted to say, but I was too much my father's son to be comfortable with most of them. So I asked for more information, just to hear his voice, and know I hadn't made this all up. Are you the last of them now? I asked. There are other dragons, Ward, though they've always been rare. Now that the poison is gone from the magic, I expect some of them will return. You can do something for me, I said abruptly. I've always wondered what a dragon looks like. He grinned at me, suddenly looking even more like Tostin than usual. Bouncing to his feet, he took several steps back and changed, the lines of his human form seeming to flow naturally into something much larger. We'd both forgotten about Pansy, who stiffened and pulled until his reins just barely stayed where I'd dropped them. By the time I'd calmed him down, there was a dragon in Hurog once more. He was easily twice as large as the stone dragon, and much more fantastical. His narrow muzzle was deep midnight blue, as were his feet and sharp talons. Above the muzzle and its business-like teeth, the scales lightened to violet, a lighter shade than his Hurog blue eyes, altered only in shape, which glittered against the darkness of his face. His wings, half-folded, were edged in gold and black. The scaled skin connecting the fragile wing bones was lavender. Like Pansy, I was frozen, but by his beauty, not by fear. I've never seen so many shades of purple, I said, and gods delivered me, he preened, flexing the spikes that ran along his spine and spreading his wings to full extension. The sudden movement was almost too much for Pansy, and he whistled a shrill challenge as he rose on his hind legs. Instantly, the dragon closed his wings and folded gently back into the aura I'd known. Sorry, he said. I forgot I'd scared the horse. Worriedly, Pansy huffed and snorted, making certain that the horse-eater had gone and wouldn't bother his people. Sifirin's oath, Auric, I breathed. That was the most glorious sight I have ever seen. He hugged himself nervously. Does that mean I can stay here? Bone deep, a feeling of great contentment fell over me, washing away the conflicting rage and joy I'd been torn between. You're my brother, I said, as I had to Tostin. You'll always have a home here. As we walked down the mountain trails, I asked, Auric, how is it that your human form looks so much like Tostin and most of the rest of the Hurogs I know? He grinned and peered up at me from under his eyelashes. Ward, I thought you knew. Hurog means dragon.
This concludes the reading of Dragon Bones. Your reader has been Joe Manganiello. This recording of Dragon Bones was recorded by Buzzy Multimedia in 2010 through an agreement by Patricia Briggs. Neither this recording nor any part of this recording may be broadcast, reproduced, duplicated, or used for any purpose without the written permission of Buzzy Multimedia.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.